from respondent related to how that then award of the entire homestead is in accordance with the statute that only...
Well, we'd take off the mortgage balance.
I still believe it would be above the 50%, even if the mortgage balance was taken off. Thank you.
Good. Thank you, counsel. We'll take the matter under advisement. We appreciate your comments. Have a good day. Next matter on our oral calendar, State of Minnesota versus Justin Darrell Reynolds, A18-1020. And as a reminder, each counsel will have 15 minutes for presenting their argument, 5 minutes in response for appellant. When you approach the podium, we ask you to identify your name for the record. And as soon as counsel for appellant is ready to proceed, you may.
Appreciate that, Your Honor. Thank you. Your Honor, my name is Michael B. Padden. I represent the appellant in this matter. May I proceed, Your Honor?
You may.
Your Honor, this appeal arises from a conviction in Ramsey County District Court on a aiding and abetting second-degree murder case. The gravamen of this appeal, Your Honor, has to do with the fact that the legal theory of aiding and abetting was permitted by the trial court at the time of trial. A little background factually, Your Honors. The charge in the case was second-degree murder with intent but not premeditated. The date of that charge was June 13, 2017. That's how the criminal complaint read. The conviction on February 6, 2018, was for aiding and abetting murder in the second degree with intent not premeditated. The case has a rather strange factual background. The key, it appears, and I don't think there's any dispute here, I think the state would agree with this, this was a murder that happened outside of a bar in St. Paul, and it was quite a wild situation outside of this bar, especially after the shot rang out. The investigation by the authorities, Your Honors, revealed a witness by the name of Denise White, who alleged that a gentleman by the name of Charles Fry said to my client, and this is a quote from the complaint, excuse the language, "shoot that nigger," and then she alleges that she then witnessed my client shoot the victim.
I'm going to interrupt, and only because this time goes so fast when we have oral argument cases. You have a lot of issues that you're bringing to us to address, and the first one is you're, of course, arguing that the district court erred in giving the jury its aiding and abetting instruction. And I have a problem with that because the judge did just exactly what we expect the judge to do. He's charged with aiding and abetting. That's for the jury to decide. The elements of the offense were given to the jury. What did the court do that was wrong?
The sole witness that supported the allegation of aiding and abetting, Your Honor, was Denise White.
But that's what the jury decides, whether a witness is to be believed or not believed. And the jury listens to the instructions of the judge. You're taking issue with the jury instruction. So the judge says, go forth, and if you find all of this, then he's guilty of aiding and abetting. And I don't follow your argument on that because the judge did what we expect the court to do, which is say, you've got to find all of this. The jury makes a decision on whether the witness was correct or whether there was confusion or the state met its burden. So I can't follow your argument in your brief.
Perhaps I was negligent in not mentioning this at the beginning of my argument, Your Honor. Denise White, who was the only witness, the only evidence that the state had in the issue of aiding and abetting, did not testify, as my brief makes clear. She committed her own murder, allegedly. She did end up pleading to that murder. There was a hearing on this issue, Your Honor. Let me back up a little bit. Fry's counsel, we had defended this case on an alternative perpetrator theory. We did provide sufficient notice and made it clear that Charles Fry, we contended, was the murderer, which, to be frank, I I think it's very clear, as depicted on a video. You see him lean forward. You see muzzle flash. It's clear that Frye committed the murder. Denise White, however, committed her own murder, and Frye's counsel competently pointed out the fact to the state that they were aware of that. That matter was heard on Frye's case, and another judge in Ramsey County, not the judge for our case, concluded that Denise White would not be permitted to testify in Frye's case. The decision was also made that Denise White would not be permitted to testify in our case because Denise White would be asserting her constitutional right not to testify by virtue of the fact that the merger charges against her in a separate matter would still be pending.
Was that at the same time that the motion to dismiss for lack of probable cause on the aiding and abetting was heard by the Ramsey County District Court?
We brought our motion, Your Honor, in December, at the end of December. The timing, I think this is important to note, the way that Frye's counsel made it known that they were aware of this murder committed by this key witness to the state was they served a supplemental discovery request. And I think this is important. On the exact same date that happened, amazingly, a miracle of all miracles, the lead homicide investigator contacts the victim, in our case's girlfriend, a woman who had previously provided information. She was present when the murder happened and said she didn't see anything of substance. On the exact same date, Your Honor, the exact same date, a miracle of all miracles, there's a 5-minute phone call with this witness, and all of a sudden she says, you know what, I just remembered something, and I remember now that Reynolds had a gun. She didn't say she saw the murder, Your Honor, but she said she saw a gun at the time of the murder and that our guy possessed the gun.
Was that the subject of cross-examination at trial?
Oh, yeah, sure. And Your Honor, to make clear, I also brought this out with the lead homicide investigator in detail because I thought, you know, I mean, obviously, as a defense attorney, if you have something as significant as that happen, you're going to want to know the details about the interaction with that witness, especially a witness who's made clear before that she didn't see anything of substance. She said she heard a shot and she ran away. I would suggest, Your Honor, that this indicates that the state had a mentality of win the case at all costs, call this witness up. But, by the way, the girlfriend of the victim. And you have to wonder what kind of conversation there was in that regard, because it seems reasonable they would have pointed out the fact that Denise White had fallen by the wayside. I mean, you can imagine how angry I was about this situation. And the testimony from the lead homicide investigator, Your Honor, was along the lines of, well, yeah, I just called her up on the phone. It was a real short conversation. You know, short conversation ends up in a report, and the next thing you know, that, you know, my client, if that information is believed by the jury, is looking at essentially a life sentence. So the issue that we have here is not the fact that we did not prevail on our motion to dismiss. That's not the issue. The issue that we have is once White had fallen by the wayside, the case should have been presented to the jury on the issue of, was our guy the trigger man? Did he commit the murder? That's where we had a problem.
Well, that's your defense.
Right,
but the charging authority doesn't say who did it. The charging authority says, that's the guy, we have to prove it, we're going to show you how you did it. And you say, no, it wasn't him.
I know, but Your Honor, here's the point I'm trying to make. And I understand your question. If the only witness you have on the issue of aiding and abetting falls by the wayside, the state should have abandoned that theory and then tried the case simply on, you know, did he murder the victim.
Mr. Patton,
so
I want to...
You're arguing the sufficiency of the evidence to support
aiding
and abetting.
But Your Honor, the problem was exacerbated by...
If you're saying there wasn't sufficient evidence, that's a sufficiency of the evidence argument.
Well, it shouldn't... Our position with Judge Tilson was it should not have been submitted to the jury. And Your Honor, this situation was exacerbated by the fact that the attorney for the state gets up in her closing argument, and this is a fear about aiding and abetting. It's a legitimate fear. Gets up in not her primary argument, but her rebuttal, and actually says, I'm not making this up. You can't make up stuff like this. It's right in my brief. It's right in the trial transcript. He was there. In other words, just by virtue of the fact that one black man was standing next to another black man, he must be guilty of something. And then the other thing she said, and this is a quote from the trial transcript. It's in my brief. This is what Ms. Back said.
She didn't say a black man was there. She said he was there, meaning the person that was being charged.
No,
let's
I
just
know.
Clarify that no, because I, you're bringing race no. into this issue.
Well, I think race is relevant to this case.
Oh, but that's not the issue on appeal. But
okay.
what you are representing to this court is that, believe it or not, it actually happened. The prosecutor said he was there. The prosecutor certainly didn't commit misconduct. You're not alleging that.
No, I just think it's naive to think that race did not play into what happened in this case.
That's why we have juries, and juries make a decision.
But the next thing she said, Your Honor, the next thing she said was, and this is a quote, this is significant, quote, he stood right there with Charles Frye when the shots were fired. Now, you might say to me, well, Mr. Padden, when you have an impermissible argument like that, why didn't you get up and object? And I think that's a tough decision for a trial attorney, because if you get up and object, it's like you're almost saying to the jury, yeah, he's objecting because he sees that hurts his case.
Okay, but you don't, as far as I understand the record on appeal, you're not, have you argued that there was prejudicial misconduct sufficient to overturn this verdict or send it back?
No. I'm arguing that it was impermissible for the trial judge to allow aiding and abetting to be considered by the jury. That's my primary argument.
That was going to be my question, Ms. Patton. Is it,
go ahead.
You referenced the phrase, they could versus should. My question is, as a matter of law, have you cited any law that says they should when that becomes obvious, as opposed to what happened? Because there's no, if I understand, there's no dispute the instructions were proper under an aid and bet, which is the charge, and so the jury got the correct instructions. They made a determination. We know, of course, as a matter of once one is convicted, there's no distinction in terms of the penalty. So the question is, have you cited law? And in one case I noticed you referenced the State versus Milton, but what I'm looking for is a affirmative law that would tell us that when the facts make it obvious, there's no longer aid and abet scenario or no witness to
support. Your Honor, the case I cited was State v. DuVernay, which I think stands for the proposition that to submit aiding and abetting to the jury when there's no evidence to support aiding and abetting would violate the defendant's rights. So that's the case that I've cited, which I submit.
And we will ferret the record to see if there is sufficient evidence to support that charge.
Yes, ma'am.
Commenting too much today. Go ahead, sir.
Yeah, so I mean, that's really, I mean, I've raised four issues on the appeal, and the other, and obviously the second issue is significant too, that the court did not permit into evidence the fact that there was evidence that indicated that the alternative perpetrator had previously been stabbed by the victim. Obviously, that's important. That would go right to motive.
Okay, you're talking about the relationship evidence that you wanted to present?
We had stipulated, Your Honors, to the victim had a long history of criminal issues.
You stipulated that there would be no discussion about the events of that night and any prior bad blood between Rogers and Charles Frye.
No, the court claimed that we had stipulated. We had stipulated to the issue of the evidence that existed of prior criminal problems of the victim, prior issues that he had. We did not stipulate to prior issues that he had evidence that existed regarding the history between the alternative perpetrator and the victim.
Did you make an offer of proof?
I did, Your Honor. Yeah, I did. And the judge basically took the position that there had been a previous agreement, and respectfully, she did not remember what the prior agreement was, that we were simply stipulating that the criminal history of the victim, we were fine with that not going into evidence.
Agreement on the record?
I believe so, Your Honor. Yes, I cited in my brief. Yeah, it's in an evidentiary hearing before the trial date, yeah. And to be fair, that was my co-counsel that was involved with that particular matter. And appellate counsel was not the trial attorney, it was Ms. Baxt. So I'm not critical of that, but I just wanted to make that clear. So we felt that was a significant issue also, and that's the second issue that we've raised on appeal. So that's really the gravamen of our appeal. And unless Your Honors have any additional questions, I don't think I have anything else.
Very well, thank you.
Thank you, sir.
Respondent, you may proceed.
Thank you. May it please the court, counsel, my name is Thomas Raggetts. I'm an assistant Ramsey County attorney
and I represent respondent, State of Minnesota, in this matter. I'll focus on the aiding and abetting argument today, as appellant has. I will also briefly address the alternative perpetrator argument. I don't intend to address the Spriegel or magnifying glass issues unless this court has questions on those, since appellant hasn't raised those today. So on the aiding and abetting instruction argument, I think it's really important here to focus on the fact that the state's primary theory has always been that appellant was the shooter. That was the focus of the closing argument. That was the focus of the rebuttal. If you look at the trial transcript on February 3rd, day three, the prosecutor noted the complaint identifies appellant as the shooter. And the district court, Judge Tilson, says the state's theory has always been that appellant was the shooter. That's page 15 of that February 1st transcript. So there's never been any deviation from the theory here being appellant's the shooter, that's what the video shows. Now, yes, the prosecutor made sort of a throwaway comment at the end of rebuttal that even if he wasn't the shooter, he could still be guilty of aiding and abetting. And it wasn't just he was there, so that makes him guilty. She noted his presence before and after the crime. He was part of the argument. He went under the hood with Mr. Fry. That's all on page 98 of the February 5th transcript.
And is it your argument that that's sufficient evidence to support the charge of aiding and abetting going to the jury?
No, Your Honor. My argument is that appellant has not established any prejudice here when the evidence clearly is sufficient that appellant was the shooter. So even if there wasn't sufficient evidence for the prosecutor's sort of fallback alternative theory, appellant hasn't identified any case law that says that that's somehow structural error, and he hasn't identified any prejudice when we've got this video showing him doing the shooting. And, you know, appellant again says the video shows the opposite, but I'd respectfully...
But what do you submit is a part of the record that bears out an aiding and abetting theory?
Well, Your Honor, it turns out that the evidence here wasn't enough for aiding and abetting. I'm conceding that. Yes, it wasn't a bad faith argument by the prosecutor, and no one's alleging that it was. I mean, he was there before and after. The case law says you can infer participation from that, but the case law says you need more than that. You need active proof of a step that shows you were intentionally aiding, and the witness who would have testified to that ended up not testifying, as appellants described. So it would have been better, certainly, if the prosecutor had never mentioned aiding and abetting in her rebuttal. But again, that was the close of rebuttal. Rebuttal is extemporaneous almost by definition. The thrust of her argument, as everyone has always recognized, was the prosecutor's argument was appellant was the shooter. The video shows he's the shooter. That's what the complaint says. That was the argument here, and the evidence is clearly sufficient for that, so there's no possible prejudice. An appellant hasn't identified any case law where that would require a reversal.
I'm assuming, Mr. Haggis, then the jury, though, is informed about aiding and abetting, what that means, the standard instruction. So does that not, at least intuitively and on its face, create a potential confusion then if the state's conceding and really, as a practical matter, sounds like it had some time before the day of trial and even at trial, other than that one comment, suggest then there's that possibility then some were convicting on an aid and abet what the state concedes isn't sufficient versus a unanimous verdict of being the shooter.
I think it is very important here that you look at the jury instructions. If you look at the February 5th transcript again at page 63, Judge Tilson properly instructed the jury on the elements of essentially finding appellant guilty as the shooter, as the person who intentionally caused the death of the victim here, Mr. Rogers. So there's no dispute that those are proper, and then she followed that up with the aiding and abetting instructions, and there's no dispute that those were accurate too. It would have been better if those hadn't been given, but the jury was properly instructed on what they needed to find to conclude aiding and abetting, and there wasn't evidence for that here. The jury was also properly instructed on what they needed to find him guilty as the principal, which they did, and so that's where there's no prejudice here. Even if there was jury instruction, if there was language given to the jury that didn't need to be there, perhaps shouldn't have been there, there's no prejudice when there's clearly sufficient evidence of the state's primary theory, the main charge, that he was the principal. And Minnesota Supreme Court case law makes clear that aiding and abetting is not a separate charge. Aiding and abetting can be given to the jury even if it wasn't in the complaint. So we're not talking about a jury unanimity problem where you have two separate crimes and you're not sure which the jury believed. And appellant hasn't raised jury unanimity before this court, so that isn't even an issue here. But there isn't any basis for reversing and holding that the juror should have been asked to specifically identify, are you finding him guilty as the principal or are you finding him guilty as the aider and abettor? I'm not aware of any case law that's ever applied jury unanimity to that particular distinction. And again, that issue has been waived by not being briefed before this court. So the bottom line ultimately is there clearly is sufficient evidence to support the state's theory that appellant was the shooter, and therefore it was not prejudicial for jury instruction language to be included on aiding and abetting. And appellant hasn't cited any case law, again, that would support reversal here. I think those are the main points I wanted to make on that argument. I'll move on to the alternative perpetrator argument. I didn't understand counsel's argument or answer today to the question of whether he made an offer of proof. There isn't one in the record. There is no offer of proof, and therefore this court cannot reverse because it would be based on mere speculation. We have no idea whether the defense had any evidence besides, well, I heard on the street that A stabbed B or something like that. We have no offer of proof here that they had admissible, non-hearsay evidence to support this alternate perpetrator theory of a previous interaction between Mr. Fry and Mr. Rogers, the victim here. I think it's also important to be clear here about exactly what the defense agreed to here. And if you look at the jury transcript from the first day, January 29th, the defense said, quote, we're not going to be offering any testimony regarding this bad blood, unquote. So the defense agreed on the first day of trial they weren't going to offer any testimony about previous interactions between Mr. Fry and the victim. And that's right here in the transcript. So this is not a situation where they said, we really want to, but the judge said no. They agreed with what had been said earlier, that that wasn't going to come in. That's extraneous. And then on day three of the trial, there was another discussion, and the prosecutor said, well, hold on. If they are going to do this, we're going to need a continuance. And it was again agreed this evidence wasn't going to come in, and that would have been a good time to make an offer of proof. But again, there's no offer of proof, and that decides the matter alone right there. You've also heard a conspiracy theory today that the prosecutor and the cops created evidence here. That hasn't been argued in the brief. There's nothing to back that up. There's no claim of prosecutorial misconduct. This witness, the fiancée of the victim, was heavily cross-examined about the fact that she didn't initially say, I saw appellant with a gun. She said it later. She explained, I was in shock. She'd just seen her fiancé killed. Law enforcement has explained this is not uncommon for witnesses after a traumatic event to remember more things or to tell the police more things. And if this really was a conspiracy theory, or what really was a conspiracy, I don't know why she wouldn't have said, yes, I saw appellant shoot my fiancé. But she didn't say that. She said, yeah, I didn't see the shooting. I just saw the gun afterwards. And there's no claim before this court that the prosecutor created that evidence or the police acted inappropriately here. That's just not an issue before this court. The other issues are the Spriegel evidence and the magnifying glass, and again, I won't go into those unless you have questions on them. And I will relinquish the balance of my time unless you have additional questions.
Thank you, counsel. Mr. Patton, you may respond if you wish.
Briefly, Your Honors. Your Honors, I have to ask the court a question. If there's been a factual development since the brief...
You can't ask the court a question, but we can ask you a question. What's the prejudice to your client on the aiding and abetting theory?
The only witness they had on aiding and abetting was not allowed to testify, Your Honor. She committed a murder and was going to plead Fifth Amendment when she testified, so that didn't go into evidence. So the state should have abandoned that.
You're not... asserting that there was a manipulation by the prosecution in terms of its charging authority?
Well,
That's what I'm trying to figure out.
I think they should have, once Denise White fell by the wayside, I think the reasonable thing and fair thing and just thing to do would have been to abandon aiding and abetting. I think counsel just conceded that. The problem here is the verdict form. It's very specific. It says, we, the jury, find the defendant guilty of the charge of aiding and abetting murder in the second degree with intent not premeditated. So, you know, I think under the facts of this case that, the reality is we don't really know what the jury decided. We can't say that the jury decided that Reynolds was the trigger man because aiding and abetting was how the case was submitted to them. So, respectfully, Your Honors, I think the abuse here is so bad that this case should be reversed and remanded, and it should be tried on the issue of did Reynolds in fact commit the murder? And that then you would have a fair, if in fact the jury comes back and concludes that he did commit the murder, then that would be fair. But the fact that it was submitted on aiding and abetting and that the jury dealt with the issue of aiding and abetting with their decision, I think it is why this is an unjust result and why the defendant should be permitted a new trial. Thank you, Your Honor.
Good. Thank you, counsel. Thank you for all your arguments and comments in writing and for guests for being here, and we'll take the matter under advisement. We will now be adjourning the oral portion of our calendar and proceeding with the non-oral portion. Have a good day.
Thank you.
Please go ahead. I'm just slow.